Welcome to the Microsoft 365 Developer Podcast with your host, Jeremy Thake. Each week, you'll catch us speaking to expert developers about new tech, lessons learned, and opinions in this space. Okay, welcome back to the podcast. I'm actually really excited to get to episode 2 with you, Andrew. So how have you been since Build?
The restart dot 2. Been pretty good, man. I've actually spent a good amount of time really trying to digest and catch up on everything that happened to Build as Build was going on, but then afterwards, like watching tons of videos of sessions afterwards, taking notes, asking questions. So it's this was a really good one this year. This is really good. I've been pretty critical of how Microsoft has done it in the past, but I love the fact that you guys posted all the videos to YouTube this time, like right away. So
yeah,
you could, if you've got like a paid YouTube subscription, you could like download them all. So I had them all on my iPad on that. I just came back from a trip to the from East Coast to West Coast, and I binged a ton of them on that trip, watching them in double speed, taking notes.
Yeah, it's pretty smart. I haven't actually, there's a few I haven't watched yet still that I helped curate some of the content for. So it's going to take me a while, but we've been really busy post-build on like planning for the next 6 months and doing our rewards discussions for all our teams. So it's last week was a big week kind of rolling off the back of Build.
Yeah. It was good. You guys did a good job with it. I mean, I thought that, I mean, we'll get into it, but like I especially, and I'm not saying this because you and I are doing this today, but I think that my favorite session from Build, as we'll talk about a lot of Copilot extensibility stuff, I thought the one that you and I hope I say it correctly, Barnum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all's session BRK150 was by far one of the best ones in terms of just positioning and understanding kind of like what was going on and stuff. Thank you. Be able to kind of be like the starting point, and then from there, like mind map out to other sessions. So I really, really liked it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we were set up to succeed by having that session because we knew it would add a lot of the clarity that you wouldn't get by having a breakout for each topic area.
Yeah.
We fought really hard to have that session because in previous years, we got tons of feedback that every session spent 15 minutes framing where you are. Whereas the idea with this one was we do the framing once, and then if you jump into another session, go back to this one to understand it. And so, yeah, the developer's guide really helped this year with our track, I think. And I spent a lot of time on that slide that everyone has grabbed, and it's been actually really nice internally with the field for people to be like, hey, we're using that slide to explain the difference between, you know, plugins and graph connectors and going off and building your own custom engine Copilot. So.
Yeah, and
we invested a lot of time in that slide, so it's good that that's working out.
It really did. I thought it was really good. I guess the only feedback I would have had for your session was, and I know, I mean, it's not like it's, you would have just made it shorter, but I'm not sure what else you would have said. But like, I know that there were some demos that were kind of shown, like some kind of code. But I was like,
yeah,
the breakouts doing all those for the deep dive stuff, that's cool. But like the positioning stuff and having like your session was like when you're on the bus on the way in. It's giving you the, hey, here's the plan, and now go through and look at the schedule and see what's there. So I did and we put a link to it in the show notes, but I did a big like roll up post that was like, here's everything Build that is, I think is interesting to Microsoft 365 developers.
Yeah. Yeah.
With some ancillary stuff that would be like, for example, updates to like Azure Functions or updates to like an API center over in the Azure space. But, there's clearly lots of stuff that was like for, you know, .NET devs or for container people and stuff. But I was if you're a 365 dev, this is the stuff that you need to know. And I thought that that session was like, thankfully it was the first one that I watched because that was also like the roadmap for everything else I wanted to go.
Yeah, we fought really hard to get that right off the keynote for that reason too.
It's great.
It wouldn't have made sense for us to do that at the end of the week, right? And so that worked. And I will say it was number 5 out of all the breakouts of the whole Build in terms of attendance and voting. So we were pretty stoked to.
I didn't even vote. I could have gotten you 4th. So my bad.
we could have beat Scott Hanselman. Yeah.
Well, his sessions are always like, I don't know. I mean, they're not like, they're fun, but I'm not really sure I learn anything from there. They're more like entertainment. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't go to Build to be
entertained. Individual to be able to do something like that, and he's just like incredible at it.
Yeah,
But yeah, it got to the point where I, you know, if you're going to build for announcements on things, it's not really going to be where things get announced. But, you know, you, I mean, even watching someone code, you can learn a lot. And, you know, there's been a while where I haven't been coding because I've been more in customer and partner management world. Mm-hmm. Whereas now running this DevEx team again, you know, I've been having to get out Visual Studio Code and Visual mm-hmm. Studio 2022 and actually cut code again.
Yeah.
And like learn, what was it we were doing the other day? Oh, working out when I was presenting on the screen in person to a big group of people how to change the Zoom level of the code. And in Visual Studio 2022, it wasn't the same as in VS Code.
Yeah.
Because the control pluses and minuses don't work. So yep. Yeah, it's been a long time. And usually that's the first thing I do when I'm coding is like increase the font size because I can't read anything properly.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you on that. I mean, it's still, I mean, you need... The demo sessions are good. I guess it's like a general feedback. The ones that I can't, everybody's got a different style, right? Everybody's got a different yeah. style, how they like to present. Everybody's got a different style, how they like to consume stuff. For me, like the part where it's almost done like a play, where there's like this skit and people are trying to go back and forth. Like they say, yeah, you can yeah. tell it's like so overly scripted. I'm like, dude, this isn't elementary school. Let's yeah. just show me show me what you're doing. And like, show this. All right, I'm going to show you this one. I'm going to show you this one. Not like, well, what if I wanted to do this? Oh, that's great. We were going to do this. Like going, I'm pretty sure that wasn't like off the cuff.
So. Yeah, it's like the Delia Smith already baked kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, turkey's down in 5 minutes.
It's hard because you try and, with these events, you try and do something a bit different. And I remember like the Windows Phone days where people were putting phones in blenders on stage to try and bring people into content and then do a bunch of Windows Phones announcements. Like people have tried all sorts of creative things to get people into the room.
Yeah.
And with build, you know, there's 8 different individual sessions going on at once.
Yeah.
Drawing the right people into your session is tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we were waiting, the keynote got delayed because someone rambled on, mentioning no names. And they were like, okay, hold starting for 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, that's great. And then the room just filled out. And I looked at Barnum like, wow, this is incredible. There would have been about 900 people in the room in person. And I forget how many tens of thousands of people online. So it was kind of impressive to kind of have that going on, honestly.
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, it was good. How many people did you say you had in the room for yours?
There was about 800, 750 to 800, I think.
So, and there were what, like 3,000 people there, 2,000 people there?
Yeah. In total, I think we've had like 6,000-7,000 that have watched the breakout, I think. Man. So, but the keynote obviously is significantly higher than that.
Yeah, I thought I loved it. I loved it. I think you did a great job. You did a fantastic job with it. I'll say this because we're going to dive into a bunch of stuff I know in this episode. If anybody is interested, since this is the Microsoft 365 Developer Show or podcast, I'm still getting new to it. I'm new to this show, so I'm still getting the name. I was tempted to wear one of my Microsoft Cloud Show
t-shirts. I love those shirts. I still have those green shirts.
I still have.
Well, I did see CJ that they're really good for cleaning windows and cars. They've got that like soft feel to them.
Oh, you jerk. No, actually, so check this out. Yeah, there you go. I still have a bunch of them like in a bag. under my desk here from stuff that we never got rid of. So yeah, I still have a bunch of them. So when mine actually wear out, I can go back to those.
There we go.
But yeah, so I did a roll up post that if anybody, we'll put the link in the show notes, but I did a short link for it too to make it easy. It's just acon.me/build2024wrap-up, all one word. But what in that post too is the last stuff we'll talk about. I created like a YouTube playlist that's just a curated list of videos really that cool. are just for Microsoft 365 devs. It's got 35 videos in it. And I'll add something if I see it, something later. But
yeah,
it's linked there. The book of news is linked there. And then there's all the sessions that we'll talk about. I have them deep linked in there as well.
Yeah, that YouTube playlist is super helpful. So I was actually going to do the same thing, but if you've got it, I'm going to grab that.
Yeah.
It was actually interesting watching when your post came out. You'd stolen the feature slide that I'd invested a ton of time on with the
yep.
explanation of like what Copilot extensions are and what you learned from last year and what's new from this year. And I think it is overwhelming when you see the entire slide rendered out. And so what I'm going to do is do a quick 4-minute video of like my talk track to that with it animating out so it builds easier.
Yeah.
But in doing that, do you have any questions from it? Like Like, did that seem clear as mud, or like, where were you at after seeing my session and seeing all the content at Build?
So for me, it definitely helped. I watched it the first time. I watched it live the first time. I then went back and rewatched it, or I watched like one or two of the other sessions. Like I did, I'm going to forget the numbers. I think it's like BRK 148 and BRK 151.
Yeah.
Whereas the one that like John Miller and Joey.
Yeah. Yeah. Did. Yep.
And then there was one that Bob German and.
Yeah. Bob's was 151. And then the Build Your Own Copilot was reached 320 million users in the flow of your work, building your own copilot for Teams. It's 146. Yeah. That was Joey Glock and John Miller. And I mean, they're both really well, all of those guys, Bob and David and Joey and John, are really good presenters.
So I watched yours first and I had a good idea. And then I went back and then the next two I watched were those two.
Yeah.
The Bob German's one and then the one that Joey and John Miller did. And I went back and I rewatched yours. I watched it the second time. I watched it in double speed. But when I watched it the second time,
talking really, really quick.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess one and a half. But when I realized that as I was watching what those other two sessions, I was starting to get a little confused where everything kind of fit in the positioning.
Yeah.
And so when I went back and rewatched yours again, I really appreciated that slide that you had in yours. So like, in my blog post, it's the third, it's the second picture I use, but it's like it's titled Copilot Extensions. And you've got like a 5-column table that shows where graph connectors, plugins, declarative copilots, and custom engine copilots, where they all fit. And I think that really helped clear things up. The one question I had, and I know we talked a little bit on the pre-show and we were like, we can't do this. We should do this on the show.
It's more natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Not so Delia Smith.
So the one question I had for you, and I understand it now, but I'll have the, and I was confused at the time, but in case anybody else was, I'll give you the chance to answer it as well, was to me, everything was positioned like all at the same level. So you had like five options.
Yeah.
Where when the more I looked at it, the more I'm like, well, wait a minute. This really looks like graph connectors and plugins really are more at a level down, and then a level above it are declarative copilots sit on top of that.
Yeah.
And also custom engine copilots. So do you want to clarify like what I,
yeah, how so I was? So what happened was we built these slides out, Barnum and I came up with the idea of like the, we should be able to describe this like the old pizza as a service thing. So, you know, IaaS, PaaS,
SaaS.
IaaS, PaaS, SaaS. Yeah, and, you know, the idea of, you know, in those days, you would be like, well, are you building the pizza from scratch, or are you, you know, chucking it in the microwave and clicking 2 minutes, or are you going to a restaurant and someone's feeding you?
Right.
As the three levels. But the benefit of that was in explaining IaaS, PaaS, SaaS in that way, you talked about how close to the metal you were in the stack. And so we wanted to do the same thing with graph connectors, plug-in, declarative copilots, custom engine copilots, in that when you make those choices, the AI stack you're building on top of is different.
Right.
And so when you're building graph connectors or plugins or declarative copilots, which wrap plugins and graph connectors, they're all building on our AI platform. Mm-hmm. And that's the big differentiator, right? Like when I'm using a graph connector to index into Microsoft Graph, that is immediately available as knowledge to the Microsoft Copilot.
Mm.
If I'm building an API plugin and I deploy that into Microsoft 365, the Microsoft Copilot, if you enable the plugin, can talk directly to that plugin.
Mm.
And likewise, if I build a declarative copilot and I include graph connectors, SharePoint search scopes, plugins in there, all that's running on our stack. And the main purpose of the slide was to then highlight, if you have a custom engine copilot, you're not using our AI platform at all. Mm. You're bringing your own model, your own orchestrator, your own knowledge, your own triggers, your own actions. You can customize a workflow instruction. So your LLM or your SLM, your small language model, can be whatever you want it to be. And then the only thing that you're really benefiting from in that stack then is the user experience. And the bit that Joey and John showed in their session was, you know, you can build those custom engine Cobalts in lots of different ways. Mm-hmm. One of them is Teams AI library. Mm-hmm. One of them is Copilot Studio. And those things can be deployed to as a channel to Teams, much in the same way you used to build bots in Teams, and they would be right there next to a one-on-one chat.
Mm.
But the reason they play into the Microsoft Copilot extensibility world is I can be having a chat with the Microsoft Copilot, and you'll hear us, we're not meant to, but everyone does anyway, is like the big C and the little C Copilot. The big C Copilot being the one that lives in Teams or office.com/chat or copilot.microsoft.com. That's like the, you know, the main Copilot. Is that you can have a plugin go, oh, actually I can hand you off to a custom engine Copilot. And then what that does is it takes you into Teams and it takes all of the context. So whatever conversation you've been having with that Microsoft Copilot, the big C Copilot, you could have been talking to a bunch of plugins and got lots of information back. That context gets handed over to the custom engine Copilot, then it takes control of the conversation with the user. And the benefit of that is that because the custom engine Copilot is your own AI stack, you can have a lot more control and fine-grained controls of exactly how that engagement happens with the user. And so that's kind of what we were trying to do, was show that, you know, we want to give choice. We want to give people the ability to kind of start quickly, almost in a SaaS experience with Copilot Studio, mm-hmm. or even move faster with a PaaS by building on top of our AI stack with graph connectors and plugins and declarative Copilots. Or they can take their time and really invest in their own AI platform and bring those things through Teams AI library or Copilot Studio's mm-hmm. custom engine Copilots.
So, okay. So a couple things you said there actually triggered a couple of questions that I've got here that I remember that I did. I was a little confused by some stuff. So let's make sure that people understand the timelines of things and the release schedule, like what's available today and what was basically shown as like it's coming soon or it's coming not so soon.
And Joey and John were like so proud to be able to say that this stuff's there now, which is like good for them, right?
Yeah.
So the Teams AI library stuff, building a custom engine Copilot's Teams AI library, having that work in Teams works right now. And there's three different SDK languages, .NET, JavaScript, and Python.
Yes. For the Teams AI library, yeah.
Yeah, I think they just announced GA of Python at the event.
I think so, yeah.
The bit that is new, other than just kind of that working, because Teams AI library has been around for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Is the fact of the ability that a plugin can hand off to that custom engine Copilot and hand off all the context.
Okay. Not available yet today.
So the Teams-based message extension plugins are available right now in public preview.
Right. Okay.
And the handoff is there. But the things that aren't available are the AI API plugins, which is the new plugin type that's not Teams-based message extensions.
Right. So we'll come back to, I want to come back to those in a bit.
Yeah.
And then so that's not there now, but so custom engine Copilot, that's available today. You can do that today.
Yeah.
To take advantage of the handoff, that's message extension based Copilot plugins, which are search-based message extensions or search action message extensions.
Yep.
And the handoff from there to a custom engine Copilot exists today.
And there's documentation on the aka.ms/m365copilot dev site.
Mm-hmm.
Inside of the message extension plugin table of contents that shows you how to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that GA today or is that public preview?
No, everything's in public preview if it's available today. Nothing is general available. Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing on the Copilot extensibility is generally available right now if you're in Microsoft Copilot.
Does that include graph connectors, even though they've been out for a while? Or?
So graph connectors are GA of getting it in the search index, but there are continuing improvements to how Copilot works with graph connectors. And so some of the things that were announced in the graph blog post that came out post build, talk to those things. But yeah, graph connectors are a GA, but some of the integration with Microsoft Copilot is still in public preview.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then what's new, and that is, all right, let me stop there. Is that when it comes to handoff? So there was a good, I'm trying to remember the demo I saw with this one, but there was a good demo either in one of the keynotes, or it was in probably in Bob's session, Bob German session 146. Yeah, 146, the reach 32, yeah. 320 million. Where I'm in the Teams Copilot experience. You know what? I got to go on a tangent here. The one bit of criticism I got for Microsoft, and this is not like, this is classic, like from the outside, is that we need a Copilot for Copilot, because this is so, there are so many freaking Copilots now, and between little C, big C, then I hear Microsoft Copilot, and I'm like, wait a minute,
it's Copilot. Microsoft 365.
Then there's the whole, I had dinner with somebody the other night, and they were asking for like an update for it. And I was talking about like Copilot for Sales. And they're like, well, how does Copilot for Sales relate to Microsoft 365 Copilot? And we started going back and forth. It was a 15-minute conversation trying to look at it. I'm like, please look, as much as I can't stand the Power Platform guys and their 34-page licensing PDF that they don't put on the website, they just basically say, here's a link to a PDF and go figure it out. It's like, oh my God, I thought we were back away from those days of licensing hell. And, now on the Copilot side, it is really hard to keep track.
I agree. We actually have engineering. We have some internal names we use that are far easier to grok the matrix of what is what, that we don't use outside the walls of Microsoft. And I, quite frankly, you know, the in all of the naming that marketing have done, we've made it pretty tricky to talk about certain things. There's a lot of feedback there that's coming through that will improve that in the next 6 months, I think. So by Ignite, you'll see a little bit more move and rationalization. So that will be easier to be like, no, not this one, that one. Yeah. It's just taken the speed that we're going at internally.
Marketing isn't going as fast as engineering.
Yeah. And also engineering, you know, by the time marketing work it out, engineering is already 3 or 4 months ahead of them.
Yeah.
Because it takes them so long to go make those decisions. For the right reasons, because we don't really want to be renaming things in a year's time, which Microsoft has a history of doing, right? Like,
oh yeah, that's a job description, professional renaming, renamer did engineer 3, right? So it's pretty cool too. I've got my old like Ignite T-shirt on there for the remix thing. So, okay, so and I'm being a little cheeky when I say it, but I'm also being serious. Like, it is hard to keep track of it, and you even brought up just a minute ago about the difference between capital C and lowercase C for Copilot. I'm like, I just thought people were being inconsistent, and I couldn't figure out where the difference was. Like, are they capital C's or lowercase C's?
Yeah, and there's a lot of it showing up in the right-hand rail. So like, you'll be able to see Copilot for Sales in that right-hand rail where alongside your declarative Copilot, because effectively a Copilot for Sales is a declarative Copilot.
Yeah.
And then obviously the third-party companies like Adobe, Acer will also show up in that right-hand rail as well as they deploy things from the store.
Okay. So let me ask you another question then. I started to ask you about this a minute ago before I went off on my tangent, but around like the handoff stuff. So that was really cool being able to see how I'm in like Teams Copilot and I'm in Copilot inside of the Teams client. And I'm prompting Copilot, and historically before build, it was always that was always going to be using data based on what the LLM was trained on, plus the data in the semantic index that that Microsoft knows from data inside my tenant, plus data that I can add to the semantic index in my tenant using a graph connector.
Yep.
Plus I refer to it as the way to implement real time data using like the RAG pattern using plugins, and being able to map the intent. So having that whole conversation, but then if I want to go through and have my own, basically bring Copilot into my application instead of me just talking to Copilot, I want to bring Copilot into my application, be that a Teams app, be that a some other kind of an app or whatever. that's the handoff thing where like I can have a message extension based Copilot plugin. When it responds with an adaptive card, there can be an action, a button on that card that when you click on it, it takes you from the Teams Copilot or Copilot in Teams over to my custom engine Copilot. That's correct.
Okay. And at that point, you're not on our AI stack. Okay. You're on your AI stack, but we're transferring a certain amount of context of the conversation you're having on AI stack over to yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a question about that.
Mm.
So when it's a Copilot I brought into my application,
mm-hmm.
is the only way I can do that through a custom engine Copilot, or can I also do that through a declarative Copilot?
Good question. So you're saying, can a declarative Copilot show up in Teams as a one-on-one chat and so forth?
Yeah. Can I create like a Teams app and not have to go through and bring my own LLMs, all kinds of, still take advantage of the whole Copilot flow.
Yeah. Not right now, but the intent is yes.
Ooh, okay.
In the future, yeah. So one of the demos that they showed was in a group meeting or a group chat, this notion of Teams co-pilots that you can at mention a Copilot directly inside of a group chat and it can interact with you there.
Okay.
Those will be both custom engine Copilots and declarative Copilots. And that was shown in the keynote, but that's all a little bit further out in terms of when that makes public preview.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. So then it's kind of like a statement. It's kind of a question because I'm kind of looking to see if you correct me or if I have it right or if you want to elaborate on it. But it was trying to identify exactly like where do custom Copilots fit in? So the way I saw it is that without a custom Copilot, so I'm used to anybody like, let's again, pre-build 2024. If I was a user talking to Copilot, so I get my data from two, potentially three sources. Either it's the LLM plus the semantic index that Microsoft already knows all the data that's from my tenant.
Yeah.
Which optionally could contain additional data that I've provided via graph connector.
Yeah.
And that would be stuff that's not like changing real time. That's stuff that you would load. Like for me, I'm looking at it as like, okay, I can put all my transcripts to my SharePoint framework courses.
Yeah. Wiki pages, websites, documents sitting somewhere in an enterprise that isn't OneDrive, SharePoint.
Right. Yeah. And then, excuse me. And then the third place the data is going to come from is a plugin, a Copilot plugin, which can be done as a message extension. And we'll talk about API plugins in a minute as well.
Yeah.
Where the declarative plugins where the declarative Copilots come into play, which they are still just in the Copilot experience in Teams, is that a declarative Copilot is going to allow me to say, to really essentially apply like a filter to say you're only interested in this kind of data. You don't look of all the data you know, let's first filter that down and say you can use these plugins and the data from like say this SharePoint site or the data from like that has these specific like terms that are already defined, basically defining my grounding that I want.
Correct.
And having a smaller subset. So it's kind of like a declarative Copilot for human resources. Or maybe that's how I could build my own Copilot for sales, if by being able to just kind of grant, say you're not interested in everything in the tenant, you're just interested in this segment of stuff.
Yeah, and that's the plan. Like what we saw internally with MS Digital is, which is like MSIT, they're building all our apps internally for our employees, is they would add additional knowledge to our semantic index through Microsoft Graph connectors, but because there was so much data in SharePoint and OneDrive, it was finding it really hard in the semantic search to like bubble up the graph connected content to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
And we were experiencing this when we started rolling this out to our biggest enterprise customers as well. And so with the declarative Copilot, you can effectively kind of scope SharePoint sites, OneDrives, you can scope graph connected content, and you can even be like bundling plugins into that mix as well. And then you can also add instructions to it too, which will tell the model to act in a certain way. So if you're building a sales declarative copilot, you could, you know, change the energy of the way the copilot talks to the salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're talking to an HR person, it could be a lot more strict and formal with how it's responding because you're dealing with HR and employee management type things.
So it's kind of
a way of tailoring the LLM in a way that you couldn't before declarative copilots came along. And we had a lot of feedback about that of it's too much of a black box. Well, with these instructions, you can start to really tweak it, which is neat.
So that's cool. That's where I saw like an opportunity for, okay. So just in context, I'm looking at it from like my business going, all right, I could take all the data that's in all the transcripts from all my videos, either from YouTube videos or from lesson videos. I could inject them into the semantic index using a plugin or using a graph connector.
Yeah.
Because that stuff doesn't change. I'm not sure what I would end up doing with plugins. But I could then go in, maybe be able to pull like transcripts from YouTube videos or something like that that are being published. But then I could build a Voitano's declarative plugin or a SharePoint declarative plugin that would be able to filter down saying you're only interested in this data that you've uploaded for these transcripts. And then if your Teams courses, you can do that. And that way I could essentially have a copilot that I can go through and just be like a SharePoint framework expert.
Yeah.
And then you also, and then am I correct in understanding that not only with the plugins, but I'm also going to be able to package up a declarative copilot and ship that to the store to be able to sell to a customer. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the intent. Right now, they're really designing the first release as for a particular tenant. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is whether you do it in Copilot Studio or whether you're in Teams Toolkit, the manifest it creates is using actual references to things in a manifest.
Mm-hmm.
So when you deploy a graph connector in the declarative copilot schema, you have to provide the internal name of the graph connector to include it in that declarative copilot. In Copilot Studio, it's a picker. It goes and looks at the graph connectors available in the tenant and you pick it. But under the covers, it's kind of storing the internal name.
Mm-hmm.
So that works in some cases, but it wouldn't work if you wanted to scope it to an exact SharePoint site, because that SharePoint site is only going to exist on MS Digital tenant. It's HR Web. It's our URL in SharePoint. Whereas in another company, it might be HR something else. And so we're working through, and actually Sebastian, my team, is working through what that will look like as an ISV software company to go build a declarative copilot that's in the store that's available for everyone to use.
Got it.
And you've seen examples of that, like Adobe Express was demoed in the keynote as an example of it.
Yeah.
And we're working with them in private preview. And in their case, they're only bundling a plugin, which is fine because the plugin reference is going to be the same in no matter what tenant. But if there are certain capabilities of declarative copilot right now that only really makes sense if you're in a single tenant, not something multi-tenant, and we're trying to work through what that looks like. So it might be the when you deploy the declarative copilot as part of the store experience, it would pop up and go, what's your SharePoint site URL for your sales site or where you keep your HR policy documents, and the user would put those in there. But we're just not quite there with that yet.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the last question then about back to the other one we were just talking about a second ago with declarative copilots, then this is something that is not currently available in public preview.
Correct. Yeah. So that's in private preview with a small handful of ISVs that you would have seen on stage at Build.
Mm-hmm.
The intent is to get all of that in public preview. And typically we won't show anything at Build unless we're confident it's going to land within 3 months of the keynote.
Okay.
It's looking on track for 3 months in the keynote, but the date that we were originally going to put like a hard date in the slides of this day is when it's going to all be available. I'm glad we didn't. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
The challenge is pretty incredible. There's at least four different CVPs involved with shipping this one thing, and it's not all under what we call E+D internally, which is Rajesh Shah, who did the keynote. Some of this stuff is under Scott Guthrie's org as well in Azure. And so just aligning dates, the ship rooms have 50 people in them to get this stuff through. And so, you know, if one team has a dependency on another team and it's slipping, like the dates jump out quite a bit. And that's what we're experiencing at the minute.
Got it. Okay. So, sounds like what you just said then, though, summertime 2024.
US, you know, Northern Hemisphere summertime.
There's a place outside the US? I'm just kidding. You have a funny accent. Where are you from?
Arkansas. That's where I'm from.
No, you're not. You don't have electricity there. I'm sorry to the Arkansas contingent of your podcast. That's a joke. That was a joke from our one specific Arkansas well. Friend. So that's really appealing. That one's going to be really appealing and interesting to watch.
That balance and the naming, you know, we've months and months discussion around what are we going to call these things? You know, the custom engine co-pilots internally, we were calling custom co-pilots up till near the end. And we really wanted to get the engine word in there to delineate that you're bringing your own engine, like you're bringing your own AI platform versus declarative co-pilots where you're really on top of our stop and it's declarative. And those are the two co-pilots, whereas graph connectors and plugins don't have the name co-pilot in them because they're really foundational building blocks of either getting into the knowledge or getting into the actions. And so then the idea is that both declarative co-pilots and custom engine co-pilots will appear in different user experiences and the users will just know them as co-pilot. They don't care they're declarative. They don't care they're custom engine. Mm-hmm. They'll just be little C co-pilots that appear in different parts of our experiences.
You and I talked about, I'm going to say this, and I know this is kind of like one of those, we talked about it almost, I think the week of build or like, I think almost like right after you got off stage, I texted you about this. You didn't respond for a couple hours, but it was like, right when you got off stage, I was like, so how does the naming of this thing work? Is a custom engine co-pilot a custom co-pilot? Is it a this and that? Because I saw like different sessions talking about different things. I'm like, you said custom engine co-pilot. Is that the same thing I'm seeing other people saying as well?
There was a session where I don't think they necessarily agreed with engine, so they didn't use it. But ultimately, a custom co-pilot is the same as a custom engine co-pilot, yes.
Okay. But it's like the Microsoft term when I'm Googling it, binging it. Well, if I want to find it, Googling it, then I'm sorry, I had joke to. Right? I got to be the independent one.
Remember you telling that joke 10 years ago?
And it still works. So I'm going to be looking for custom engine co-pilot. That's the key word I'm looking for.
Yeah. And we did that a little bit on purpose too, because we wanted something specific to our world to talk about it. Whereas if you do custom co-pilot and Bing and Google right now, it sends you off to all sorts of different things that Azure AI is talking about, or even, you know, further afield are talking about. And so we wanted a term that kind of, without doing something really abstract, like or you know foo or you know fizzle or whatever, like that it was something that someone could land on in our doc sets quite easily,
something that Google's well, not like I don't know Teams. So
hey, we shot for the hills with that one, didn't we?
Oh man. Yeah, okay. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about then, I don't know if you have any questions for me, but
no, I mean, it's good. It's good to clarify. Like this is useful for people listening, I'm guessing.
The one thing I will say for anybody that's listening to this is there's a good sample that shows a declarative co-pilot. And this surprised me. Like the session was long. Well, I mean, it's a normal length session where they were talking about this, but it surprised me when I saw what a declarative co-pilot is from a developer's point of view. It's a JSON file.
Yeah,
it's a single JSON file. And it's not like, it's not like a giant JSON file.
No. We've made it really, really simple.
Yeah. So I like that. It's like the first time I saw message extensions being used as a custom co-pilot, a custom plugin for a co-pilot.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I would have wanted you guys to do. This just makes perfect sense. Piece of cake. Awesome. And then I saw this. I'm like, that's it?
Yeah.
Not thinking like, not being critical of that's it. Like, more surprised. There's like, that should have been a heck of a lot harder. So
yeah, I mean, I've been building them just in Visual Studio Code, zipping the contents of three JSON files and using Teams app CLI to push them in or sideload them into my tenant, and they show up straight away.
Yeah.
So these things, I mean, they're really quick to build if you're in code, but once Copilot Studio supports building them as well, I mean, it's just gonna, we're really going to democratize this stuff in the business, I think.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, next question then that I've got for you. So declarative co-pilots currently in public and private preview.
Yeah.
It will be in public preview middle of 2024.
Yeah, within 3 months. So I would confidently say that.
Okay. And we're recording this in early June of 2024.
Yeah.
I actually had to look at my calendar. What
before most of Microsoft got off on summer holidays here in the Northern Hemisphere. So we've got to get it out quick.
Yeah. What is it different? Oh, no, I'm not going to go there. All right. So next question that I had for you was about those API plugins. So these are in the message extension. Are they? Do you treat them as part of the message extension? Like,
no, it's a different. It's a plugin. So there's different types of plugins. So there's message extension plugins, and at Build last year, Ignite in November, we announced AI plugins and conversational plugins in Copilot Studio.
Right.
And actually, effectively, the way they've been implemented is once they're pushed into Microsoft 365. Any of those Copilot Studio plugins are effectively being converted into an open API document and a plugin manifest. And what an API plugin is, if you're in Teams Toolkit, is essentially a plugin manifest file that describes an API and uses the open API description to give more details on each function that's available in the API and what parameters there are. And what Copilot Studio does when it publishes a prompt plugin or a flow plugin or a conversational plugin or a connector plugin, is that's actually under the covers for the maker wrapping that in a plugin manifest and an open API document.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And so all of those things are API plugins. So really all it is a manifest that describes what the plugin does, and then a pointer to the open API document that describes here are all the functions that this Copilot could go use to list my Jira tickets or get my latest sales orders from a CRM. Yeah.
Okay.
And then again, those are in private preview right now, and they'll come out in public preview at the same time as declarative copilots.
So the special thing with these then, I guess my takeaway from the API plugins was that if you already have like a web service and you already have an endpoint, and if you already have this next piece, then you're good to go. But if you don't, you create an open API specification for your web service, which there's lots of tools that will do that, that can help you do that, but you can also do it by hand. It's just another, it's basically just I think about it as like a modern day WSDL file.
That's a really good one. Don't tell Daryl Miller that because he'll cry, but.
Well, so
Daryl
is one of my peers,
who we do need to get in the show with you as well, but he's on the open API board and, you know, he's been heavily involved in the plugin manifest schema with a bunch of really, really, really smart people internally.
It's for those of you who haven't seen it, at least in my opinion, OpenAPI spec, it's a messy file. It's like, it's hard. It's a big and a messy file. That's why I refer to it as the WSDL, like a new version of WSDL. But I mean, I get what it does. And a lot of times you're not going to even I like the fact that there are tools that will go through and gen it for you. Like I know the dev proxy tool that two of your guys have done, Waldeck and Gary, have built. I know it'll help build that out, and there's other things that you can use to like kind of sniff what you're doing, and it'll build the open API spec file. It's nice that you can then open it up and you can augment and add a lot more. You can correct things or you can augment stuff inside of it. But then with these, this is giving you, I don't want to say a replacement, but an alternative to creating a message extension, a Microsoft Teams message extension based plugin, where instead of you writing the code, the JavaScript, the C#, whatever, to call your external web service, you instead can just give it this API and it knows how to go through and to make that call for you. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think the big thing is again the choice. When we started the Copilot platform more than 18 months ago now, and we announced the Build message extension plugins, we really wanted to, you know, bring the community with us. And we knew there were lots and lots of developers that had built message extensions. And we know, you know, it's built on bot framework and it's all about commands, and it does tie a lot of business logic directly into the code you have to write. And we got a ton of feedback that people didn't want to be using bot framework for this scenario, and that they were really just like scaffolding up APIs inside the bot framework commands, and then Copilot was calling those bot framework commands. And so the idea of the API plugins was, well, let's just eliminate that scaffolding wrapper and just go straight to the source. And the orchestrator actually did a really good job of kind of calling those APIs and getting it. And the, as you say, the best part about this is if you have an API already and you have the luxury that you already have head with an open API document, the open API spec is what is almost like the schema description of an open API. An open API document is like the instance of a document that describes an API itself. And that's been interesting just to see. And so, yeah, you can get started that today in Teams Toolkit. It won't work in public preview, but you can kind of play with the tooling a bit, but you just can't sideload it right now. But also additionally, there's a REST API plugin in Copilot Studio. So if you don't want to be in Teams Toolkit, you can go into Copilot Studio, create a brand new REST API plugin and copy and paste an open API document into it. And then when you sideload that or publish it, it'll work in the same way as the Teams Toolkit one does. Arguably, I can see makers doing that, but the reality is most developers are going to want to live in Visual Studio Code with Teams Toolkit. Again, it's choice. We're going to see makers doing crazy things. And one of the things that Darryl and I and Seb have been talking about actually this morning was, you know, APIs are suddenly going to be extremely powerful and it's going to be democratized through makers with scenarios like this. And I kind of argued, well, Power Platform connectors democratized that 3 years ago because effectively all a Power Platform connector is an open API document with a manifest wrapped around it anyway. And that's why Power Platform connector plugins is an option because they've effectively leveraged all that goodness and piped that through to Copilot as well. But I think this is a little bit more clear of the benefit of it, Copilot being able to connect straight to an API.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And then these new API plugins, this is the only way you're going to be able to take advantage of, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the only way you're going to be able to take advantage of the new, like an, using an action-based.
So posts and patches. And actually what we didn't show at Build, which is in there right now because of responsible AI, is when you say go update my ticket to Jeremy or close this sales deal, Copipe will actually confirm with you first, did you mean you want to change this sales item with ID blah to close? And then you go, you know, yes or always yes. And the idea is that you don't want to risk Copilot misunderstanding what your intentions were and closing 100 deals in your CRM. And so we're doing a bunch of response way I work to for actions where it's going to write off or even call out to an external system the user on the first try, or we'll either have to allow that one instance or can allow it for all instances of.
Is the reason why we're only going to be able to do that with the API ones because that's how Copilot's going to be able to tell that this is making a change via a post or a patch? Whereas if I did it through a message extension like Codebase one isn't, I'm writing the code and Copilot doesn't know what the code is actually doing.
Whether it's a bot framework with a message extension or a API plugin, they will both support actions.
So I didn't know that.
The current aspect is that we're maintaining parity between what message extension plugins and API plugins do. We are able to move faster with API plugins than we are message extension plugins just because of the dependencies and downstream work we have to ask teams of, whereas API plugins is something that our org owns. But the intention is for now that we will continue that parity between the two.
Got it.
But what we have found is that, you know, if you've built a message extension with bot commands, there are very specific things you've done with message extensions in the plus interface in Teams chat that might not make sense that Copilot understands how to use that same command. And so we actually found a lot of people were rewriting their message extension commands to map to Copilot being more efficient at calling them. And that's when we've seen, you know, if you're starting brand new with a plugin, you should probably start with an API plugin once you're available to build them than you would a message extension plugin.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But if you're in both worlds, you may be able to build it right once with a message extension and cater for both, you know, the plus fly out in Teams as well as Copilot talking to it under the covers.
Okay. Ah, cool. I didn't realize that. That's cool. Cool. That's, I mean, there was a lot. I mean, that's a, I know we've been going for about like 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, no, I'm hopefully it helps people hearing it. I mean, it might not make sense without seeing the build content. But you know, thank you for the questions. I think it's good to get that clarity on these things. And again, once all this is out in public preview, I'm actually excited for folks like yourself to go and poke and come back with more questions on like, why is this this way? And there was a bunch of things we didn't even get to show due to the timing and duration of, and how many breakouts we got. So there'll be a bunch of YouTube content we'll be punching out in the next few weeks. There's some really cool, and maybe biased, debugging features that we've added to help understand the orchestrator and the LOD language model when you're building plugins that my team's been building, which is great.
That, okay, I think I saw a little bit of that in one demo. I mean, maybe not everything what you're talking about, but I saw a little bit where you can say you're in dev mode and it would dump out a bunch of additional stuff.
Yeah, so we're adding additional things to that. So yeah, it's really good to see, like we're really thinking through how can we help a developer to be more efficient when they're building a plugin. And so there's some debugger tools we're working on. And this says test rigger things we're running where you'll be able to like, how do you, you know, if I've got 10 prompts and I know what the answer should be, can I keep running that to make sure my LLM is always going to answer the same way? And there's a bunch of those things that we've been working on in the future, which is really cool.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to playing the public preview stuff. I'm hoping that there's a way to kind of like hook up some of my plugins like automatically to like say an Azure App Insights and just be like, monitor everything that's going on over here so I can see how people are using it so I can compare and replay and all that kind of stuff.
And I think the key part's going to be, you know, like, well, how do I get started? What do I need to know? What's the foundational learning here? You know, I talked about at the beginning of the breakout around the notion of, you know, models, orchestrators, knowledge and triggers and actions and instructions. You know, understanding the AI platform stack is going to be really important. Mm-hmm. But then also I think what's critical in this day right now is being able to build an API and understanding what an open API spec is going to be really, really important. And you know, APIs have always been important to developers, but I think they've just, it's coming to a new wave now in the way that we're meshing and bringing stuff together through things like API plugins and Copilot Studio. Mm-hmm. So as a developer, that's going to be, you know, if I was trying to ramp up, having a lot of knowledge there is going to be critical to people's careers, I think. And not just for our platform. Go look at what Google and OpenAI and other platforms are doing. They're all very dependent on APIs in the background. And so I think, you know, brushing up on those skills and being knowledgeable of all the tooling is going to be really, really critical.
I thought that really helped too. I had a hard time understanding. That's part, one of the main things I went back and rewatched what you did in your session was when you went through, like, again, the big Uber slide that you spent much time on, but that first column explaining workflow instructions, actions, triggers, knowledge, orchestrator, and foundational models.
Yeah.
Some of them like generally understood what it was.
Yeah.
But I was a little I was a little confused on like some of the nuance with it. And I thought the second time I went through it, it was very.
Yeah. I'm going to do a bunch of YouTube videos that kind of goes into more detail on that too. Like there's some more slides I need to add based on explaining that to some customers recently too. Yeah. But for me, I think it's really important. You have to understand those things so that you understand what you're plugging into the platform. And same as when you used to do SharePoint development, right, with farm solutions, what you want to understand what a sandbox solution is and where it drops stuff inside SharePoint and what a site collection container is versus a list in the document library and what content types are. We've been given permission to be a lot more open about the black box than I expected we'd be able to. And even some of the debugger tooling, we're really kind of showing behind the scenes a bit. And I think that's good that I've got that blessing to do that from our leadership.
Good. That's good. Yeah. That's good to hear because it's a little hard. It's easier to understand it when you understand how pieces work, knowing that there's a lot of stuff you don't want to open the Komodo on and everything.
And now my team's basically trying to make sure that developer experience is as simple as possible to ramp up and also explain for all the different channels we can use. So yeah, cool. Keep the questions coming, man.
I can do that. You know, I do that on you.
Awesome. Well, I know we've got a hard stop, but thank you, mate. I appreciate it. Hopefully that's useful to the audience. If there are questions people want to ask, you can mention us on the old X's, the Twitters, on the M365 dev podcast. And we all kind of field those questions in the call, or just Jay Thake or Andrew Connell as well on Twitter, I guess. It's the easiest place to get us.
Yep.
And then we can bring those questions up in the next time we catch up in, I guess, 4 weeks.
I guess so. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's going to be, wow. Yep. Definitely.
Cool. Definitely. Hopefully, maybe by then it'll be in public preview. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? It'll be summertime in the US. Sorry, in Australia.
Because the US is the only thing that exists in the Northern Hemisphere. It's summer in England too, Andrew. You know that, right? I mean, they don't really have a summer. It just is like more like Seattle weather, but you know, it's still summer. I didn't
say anything right there. You said all of it. I will tell you, I just spent the last week in Boise, Idaho for a little like conference. And even when it was 90 degrees outside, it still felt nice. And I got off the plane last night, even at 2 a.m. when it was still like in the high 80s Fahrenheit, everybody, Fahrenheit. And it felt like I got hit with a baseball bat in the gut. And it's like, yeah, oh, there you go.
That's right. For me. Dry heat any day.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Even Floridians will say that.
Thanks very much, mate. I appreciate it. And everyone, enjoy the rest of your time. Thanks for listening to the Microsoft 365 Dev Podcast. Check out our show notes on www.m365devpodcast.com and follow us on X at m365devpodcast. We'd really appreciate it if you could give us a review on Apple Podcasts too. That's all, folks.